is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn. Burn, motherfucker. Jimmy Pop and I'm a dumb white guy. I'm not old or new, but middle school, fifth grade, like junior high. I don't know mofo, if y'all peeps be fucking giving props to my hoe, cause she fly, but I can take the heat, cause I'm the other white meat known as Kid Funky Fried. Yeah, I'm hung like planet Pluto, hard to see with a naked eye, but if I crashed into Uranus, I would stick it where the sun don't shine, cause I'm kind of like Han Solo, always stroking my own wolfie. I'm the root of all that's evil, yeah, but you can call me Cookie. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn. Burn, motherfucker. Yo, yo, this hardcore ghetto gangster image takes a lot of practice. I'm not black like Barry White, no, I am white like Frank Black is. So if man is five and the devil is six, then that must make me seven. This hockey's gone to heaven, but if I go to hell, well then I hope I burn well. I'll spend my days with JFK, Marvin Gaye, Mother Ray, and Lawrence Welk, and Kurt Cobain, Kojak, Mark Twain, and Jimi Hendrix, Poltergeist, and Webster, yeah, Emmanuel Lewis, cause he's the Antichrist. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn. Burn, motherfucker. Everybody, here we go. Everybody say ho. Come on, party people. Everybody, here we go. Come on, party people. Throw your hands in the air. Come on, party people. Wave them like you don't care. Come on, party people. Everybody say ho. Come on, party people. Everybody, here we go.
DJ Q Ball, and we're here live on the podcast, my man Mark. So yeah, let's get into it, bro.
All right, brother.
I'll be as transparent as possible.
Okay, I know it's all right. So in the 90s, the Bloodhound Gang kind of shaped the dark humor in music, in my opinion. I mean, I know there was dark humor music before that, but nowadays, I think you guys were the pioneers of it. Was it just you guys felt rebellious at that time, or was it just growing up that all this came together to kind of shape that humor?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a want to be the funniest in the room, to push the envelope the furthest, a little rebellion. But at that point, we were, you know, older, but it was also, you know, with FCC, like, it was cool tiptoeing around that. But then, you know, it stung a few times when they pulled some, you know, the Foxtrot off of the radio. And but yeah, I mean, what's going on now? I mean, that's pretty much with anything. It's, you know, it's evolved, and now you have like WAP, you know, at the number one. They didn't she win like a Grammy for it? Like, yeah. But you know, yeah. Just trying to be new, different. We were young. We weren't really still. We're not really talented. So, you know, you jump around and make it a house party, and you know, people forget how bad you play. You know,
how'd you guys come together, and how the name the Bloodhound Gang just
become? The name came about from PBS. Had a show in the late 70s, maybe early 80s, called 3-2-1 Contact. And Bloodhound Gang were these group of kids that would solve crimes by using math problems, math equations. Mm-hmm. And so it sounded, you know, sounded tough, but it's not. You know, that's where it came from.
And were you guys all friends in high school that came together, or college?
Jared and Jim went to college together. They're a little older than I am. Lupus, kind of the same thing. He grew up more in the Norristown area. I went, you know, I was up a little bit in Roersford. But house parties, just groups of friends that know each other. And I was actually in college when they were doing like a small run with when Use Your Fingers came out, and that was like end of early 95, I think. So they needed passports to go to France. And my cousin actually worked at Kinko's in King of Prussia. Mm-hmm. So they were, you know, said, hey, you know, any DJs? And yeah, that's where it kind of started. So.
Oh, great, man. Fuck right. All right. So, touring, what is one of your favorite places that you played that you've run tour at?
I mean, sightseeing is, you could put St. Petersburg, Russia, you could put, you know, Reykjavik, anywhere. And, you know, in Sweden or Finland, show wise, we got more energy the more you know, center, like the middle Europe, pretty much, like Germany, Austria, okay, parts of France. And so if you're talking show wise yeah, but I always felt like with cities, there's just things you like about it. And being away from home, you kind of try to stay at the same hotel or eat at the same restaurant to try to have some you know, consistency,
normalcy.
So, but yeah, absolutely. I would anywhere in Iceland, and I love going to Russia, because I knew a lot of bands didn't go there, and yeah, there was a lot of.
What was that experience like, man?
It's awesome, especially what we kind of do, and the fact that they allowed us to do that for the most part, you know, for 15 years. You just know, you see the kids and the crowds are, they're just starving for it. You know, there's so many, you know, just tiptoeing around, making sure that it's done correctly. You know, I remember the first time we were there, there was a full on, like, 40 Russian that were in the army. So they had machine guns, and they were so they were kind of learning, I guess, and then 2 years later, and 4 years later, we're playing big arenas. And but yeah, you love it when you start in a country and you work at it and you build it and you do all the radio shows and in-store signings and, do whatever you can to kind of build a base in a country that may not, it may not be on the radio as often as some of the others. So.
All right. So I got to throw this question in here. What is one of your guilty pleasure songs?
Guilty pleasure songs? Probably Lap Dance. That still kind of makes me laugh. I always like, She Ain't Got No Legs. Why Is Everybody Always Picking On Me? The ones that Yellow Fever, the ones that may be a little more, in the cut B side, mm-hmm. But yeah,
where'd you guys get the inspiration for some of these songs? Was it just,
it could be and everything and anything. A lot of the times we make each other laugh on the bus and just to get through these long, stretches and, somebody might say something, we might see something. The actual title Hooray for Boobies came from Perry from Nerf Herder when they opened for us. This was probably 97. Mm-hmm. He came out and introduced us and he said Hooray for Boobies and it stuck, and that ended up becoming the album, So yeah, little things like that.
So the hit, everybody, some people that don't know it, they always say the Mammals song.
I was still in school and I would fly out and do a couple weeks, studio sessions when we were recording that, in January, the Broncos played the Falcons in the Super Bowl.
I don't remember which one, but I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I think the Broncos won it 2 years in a row, so it was probably 98. We were recording that, and at that time, Jim had like this Apple 2G computer, so we were able to kind of take blocks and kind of start sequencing, but everything mm-hmm. else had to kind of be done in the studio. So when we were writing the lyrics and kind of trying to put together the structure of how it's going to go, you mm-hmm. kind of move things. It was pretty cool. And, that was the process of beginning it. But at the time there were a lot of catchy lines that, and we always say if it can make us laugh, that it, for the most part, I think other people will get it. And the melody, Jim did a great job with that. So, yeah,
I know bartending, playing the jukebox. There was always one song, the Lap Dance is always better when the stripper's mm-hmm. crying. I would play randomly just to see the people's faces.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, the ones who'd get it because they laughed it so fucking hard. And the ones that didn't get it, they were like, oh my God. It was just.
Yeah, that's the shock value,
There was no in between. No, there was, no. it was just cut and dry.
Yeah. A lot of the, our humor, it might be considered too soon. But that's, that's what kind of made us laugh. It still does, actually. So
what inspired you to be a DJ?
I always kind of was, been in the music and, I started kind of collecting records, more of just kind of playing stuff. And my stepdad,
who were you collecting?
When I first started, it was kind of pulling some stuff from my stepdad. It would be like the Whispers, like Rocksteady, like early Huey Lewis. And then when I started buying it, it kind of spurred more, License the Ill, Raising Hell, Run DMC. And I kind of went the hip hop route and being submerged, in that culture at the time, being a DJ was like the best thing. You're dropping all the new songs before anybody else hears them. You're able to kind of dictate a room and create a vibe, and then people trust you, and then they love coming to see your stuff. And it's
not like it is today.
I mean, it's still somewhat like that. You're not dropping YouTube and Spotify and all that, or that's where they're getting their music. But I grew up in an era where the DJ would make cassettes, and everybody had, down the shore, you would go and buy your Fate, Ron G, like all these guys, and that was our way of, what Spotify is now.
Hell yeah. All right. So spinning, doing vinyl on the turntables and stuff like that. Have you ever tried cassette?
I learned, so before I had the money to buy turntables, I did a couple house parties with cassettes. I had two single deck and a mixer that would go up. So I would, up and down, it wasn't the crossfader. So then I beforehand went through and say, okay, the Domino album and Far Side, and I was like, all right, we're gonna play past me. So I had to get the cassette cued to the right point, then hop to the next cassette, get that, I'm kind of fading in and fading out, not really mixing, but it's still the vibe that you're setting, that's pretty much how I learned.
Do you have a collection of any of your old recordings at all?
I keep everything, man. As bad as where I listen to it and cringe. I keep it all. It's like a diary over the years.
Yeah, you ever go back and just listen to it from like the start?
I don't know. No. I don't do any of that. No. It's there. Yeah. Maybe if I get in an accident, I'm stuck in bed for a year, I might pop some headphones on and catch up on some stuff that I, might have done over the years.
Is there any memorable clubs that you've spun at that you want to give a shout out to or anything?
Man, over the years, there's been some great ones. I bet you like 60-70% of the ones that are probably not even around anymore. So, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. All right.
Like, yo, PlayStations, what up?
All right. So, is there any story that you would care to share that would not get you in trouble with anybody today? Because I know you guys were probably pretty wild on the road and stuff like that.
I mean, that could go on for weeks, man. I don't know anything, but I would kind of hone in a little bit. Like, what do you want to talk about? Pick a.
Sorry, I'm bouncing around.
It's all right.
I think it's ADD. We can stick where we're at.
Yeah, just give me like a little direction on the type of story you want to do, and we could absolutely. There's so many. I mean, it's like, 25 years worth. So,
all right. Well, maybe we could say that for a later date and time then.
Yeah, or whatever. If a topic pops in your head, you'd be like, "Hey, did you guys ever, hook up with anything?" Like, you just, I'm not going to bring up anything, but if I'm asked, of course, I'll tell you.
All right. Have you ever been naked on stage?
Yes. Yeah, a few times. So we did University of Maryland right when it was after kind of the Rate for Booby albums. Probably right around that, but we got a little bit of a backlash with in the video for Bad Touch with hitting the Frenchman with the bread over their heads. So they were homophobic, they kind of heard that. You know, we did the Yellow Fever song, even though it didn't make the other album, but it was on the B side. It wasn't a huge thing, but the university, there was a bunch of students that came in protest of the show, and it was us and Outkast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it right in their quad. It was, 10, 15,000 people. The adrenaline, it was, so I was like, well, let me diffuse anything that they may think about us being any of that, what we were being, accused of being. And I said, I'm going to go out naked and everyone's going to start laughing and then we could start the show, So it was like one of the things where you had the hat and you cover your bird and then you wave and then you pull it away like that. And at that time, we were starting with a song that had a big intro. So I knew I had a good minute or so to kind of get changed and get my act together.
Right on, man. Right on. Shit. What was that feeling like just before you went out there? Were you like,
The whole reason why any of us do it is the travel, getting to see places, and that adrenaline rush where right when, the lights go down. Like that minute where we all do a Jaeger shot, the anticipation of it is the best part,
Is it?
It gets you through, being in shitty dressing rooms that smell like piss, and stale beer, gets you through, a 10-hour flight, and then you have to hop on a 3-hour van ride, and you get there, and your luggage is lost, logistically getting from place to place, it gets you through all of that. It gets you through fighting with band members and feeling like.
Don't forget to check out Nelly's Artistic Creations for all your artistic needs. Looking for a special occasion for a friend, family, or loved one. Be sure to check out Nelly's Artistic Creations on all social media and her website on BigCartel.com. That is Nelly's Artistic Creations. And with the holiday season coming up, a nice piece of art. Always cheer the soul.
Pucker up, you pig. Kiss me like I hear they kiss on oil rigs. You know the drill. Let's get third world. Me boy with warm boom boom stick. And you girl, if you open your mind, put me down. Draw blood like Mel Gibson taught you how to make love. Let the kitty be unleashed. Drop me like an injured wildebeest. Clean up and I'll sexy. Clean up and I'll sexy. Clean up and I'll sexy. Shaka-laka, locked and loaded, locked and loaded, locked and loaded. Shaka-laka, locked and loaded. Sexy. Pirate hug, Viking grasp, positions learned in Pol Pot's yoga class, war crime sex, smell the friction like fine wine, Oakland Raiders locker room, 69, getting lucky, then it hurts, like a Wednesday's child at Joan Crawford's, missing link. Shame Colonel.
You know, at that time, young age, you know, it's you're jockeying for, you know, stage time, you know, and and how much input in, you know, where the tour may go or ideas for the next album. So you fight through all that, but that adrenaline rush gets you through any of the bad times, man. Even, you know, missing family and, you know, but the, yeah, that, if you could sell that, I'd you know, be a billionaire if I could sell little capsules of that adrenaline.
That rush. Feeling when the lights come up right away.
Yeah, right before they announce that, you know, you come out on stage.
Fuck right, man. Fuck right. Now, when you're on stage, are you in like a completely different zone? Completely different mind frame?
I feel like we're doing, like the shows are going well and, you know, we knock the rust off and we're in, we kind of feed off each other, but also give each other space and, you know, so they can be out. Like, you don't want to battle for like, who's going to be center of the stage.
Yeah.
Who's going to be up close. So it's just the depth. You know, playing off each other. But once that, all that, and, you know, us getting through it and getting, like, set lists might look good, but maybe you flip-flop one or two because it just didn't seem, you know, as fluid as we wanted it to. To get through all that, then I don't think about anything. I worry about, like, okay, we're going to stop at Waffle House. Like, while I'm, like, you know, rapping, or, you know, your head is like, okay, I got to make sure that, you know, I get my socks washed before tomorrow. I have nothing left, you know, no clean clothes. And then once that, and it's all, everything else is, it's already been done. And then, you know, and you're not thinking lyrics or am I in the right key or any of that, like that's what the rehearsals and stuff are for. So, but as soon as you get into that, where you're just like, all right, cool, it's good because you learn how not to kind of make every night a Friday night. Like, sometimes you go to bed early, but you don't want to, you know, kind of, you know, like diss any people that were might have been waiting, you know. And I always kind of, where every show is in a home game, like, you're not going to play Philly. You have to kind of still put that same energy into a Des Moines, you know, into, that's the only way that you're going to be able to kind of continue to do it when the fans know that, all right, it's not sold out. But we're not focused on the ones that aren't here, you know? And that's how it's always been. Like, all right, we're going to crush it, and then next time it'll sell out, and then, you know, we jump to a bigger venue or do two nights. You know, that was how we wanted, how we started. We didn't throw a lot of money into the advertising side of it. We wanted the word of mouth. Like, you got, like, oh my God, you guys, you have to go see these guys next time they're in town, you know. And that was before that, you know, obviously Facebook and YouTube and stuff. So you're able to make things look like they're off the cuff, but they're still, you know, they're rehearsed without, you know, obviously kids come to multiple shows on tour, especially the cities are kind of close. But they're good sports. So they don't kind of let the cat out of the bag before it happens, you know, so. But yeah, man, I love touring. I miss it. Even at some points where you're just like, look, I just need to go home for a while. You have to love it to go through all the good, you know, and the bad.
Man, I could only imagine being away that long. I was going to ask the question during the time you're not on stage and you have downtime, what are you listening to throughout those years? But so, I didn't know if it would be quiet time or.
No, nah, so or, like when we first started, we were, you know, in a van, like probably every other band. So each one of us took turns and whoever was driving picked the music. So at, you know, at that time, you know, Jim's in, we were listening to the first Weezer album, or, you know, middle Depeche Mode. I'm playing like Nonchalant and like Nate Dogg, and Lupus is playing. Yeah, like Mudhoney and, you know, and Billy's playing, you know, the Deftones White Pony album. And even though you like, then you start like, you know, it just helps you widen what you're into, especially, you know, if you dig the music that the other guys are into.
Mm-hmm. That's fucking awesome, man. So, all right. It's the bartender's jukebox. I got to throw it off subject just for 1 second.
All right.
What's your beer of go-to? I mean,
right
it is
now,
the bartender.
Right now, it's Blue Moon Mango Wheat.
Mango Wheat. Nice.
Yeah. So when I crack one at 8 a.m., it still kind of tastes like orange juice. So I don't feel that bad.
Nice. Do you put mango in it or orange?
I put orange in the Blue Moon. The Mango Wheat doesn't need anything.
All right.
Yeah. How about you? What's your beer right now?
Honestly, it will always be my go-to. I don't really drink much anymore. Pabst Blue Ribbon, the 16-ounce.
I thought you said you don't drink much anymore.
I don't, but if I do, Pabst Blue Ribbon, 16-ounce pounder cans.
Yeah, I don't know why. Growing up, that I didn't drink them fast enough, so I would have half of a pounder of warm beer, and it's just like, yeah. I do like Mad Elf. We do like a party.
Oh, Mad Elf!
But you just get retarded, bro. Like you're just wasted. And
yeah. I think I had 3 Mad Elfs one time. I got that shit faced. I knew I wasn't able to drive, so I went out to my car, threw my keys under my seat, and you know, took a nap. Woke up the next day, looking for my keys. Went outside the car. My beer was still sitting on top of the car.
Yeah,
I was like, "What the fuck." So I went back in and asked, like, what happened? They were like, ah, you know what? You said, fuck you. I'm out of here. I'm like, off 3 beers? They were like, yep.
Mad Elves. They got you.
Yeah. Yeah, they nipped me in the ass. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Any liquor of choice?
I mean, seasonal stuff. Like, I like maybe, like, blueberry vodka and lemonade in the spring.
All right.
Maybe like a white Russian in fall, in the winter time, you know, but orange crushes are good, you know.
I'll agree there, yes.
I'm crushes. Almost 50, so over the years, you know, you get sick on something and you don't ever go back to it. So like my 21st birthday, Wild Turkey, never touched it again. Did like 3 shots of that, so that. You know, it's like the NCAA tournament of alcohol, and I'm down, you know, almost 50, so it's down to like the Elite Eight, you know. Everything else, I can't even get it. I can't even order for somebody and get it over to them and catching a whiff of it, and, you know.
That my who actually is, one is Wild Turkey, but it's not turkey, like regular turkey. It's Turkey 101 and Southern Comfort.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The Wild Turkey 101. My old man took me to like the Elks when I turned 21, and he lined them up, and it was I just
fucking
think about it. Yeah.
Yep, I'm tasting the barrel right now. Mm. The last time I think I had it, I was at this little cafe called Lori's in town, and I must have had like easily 7 shots of it. Apparently said I was good, sat down my glass, and just sidestepped it straight out the front door right onto the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Never again, brother.
I
learned my lesson the hard way.
I got a story for
you. Hard way.
So talking about alcohol, we were in Reykjavik, and they drink a lot of vodka, but they do it with you eat a piece of shark that's been fermented. So what they do, and I'm not bullshitting you with this. So what they do is just take a part of the shark, they kind of cut it up. Before they cut it up, they bury it in the sand, and they piss on it for like a year, and it ferments and it gets disgusting, and it makes you, I guess, hallucinate. But you chase it, with vodka.
Yeah,
it's the worst thing that you could possibly imagine, and they bring it to you, already through that process where they bring it in a big, like a big jar they have pickles in, and so you're in a dressing room and you want to be nice to the promoter or the label. You're like, God, you guys keep doing this, and it just smells everything. It smells the whole room up. So they show up, they got this thing ready to go. They're chopping the shark up. And it's in the middle of the afternoon. And right before that, I was out at our bus, kind of grabbing my bags and stuff. And I ran into a couple fans, and they were like, hey, if you sign some stuff. No problem. And we started chatting a little bit, and they were like, well, hey, we know you smoke weed. Here's some weed. And I was like, oh, thanks. Because, we just got there the night before. I couldn't at the time, get it. So sure. Thank you. So I'm upstairs while they're chopping that. Right. And, and I got at the, it's probably enough for like a blunt or two. Right. So the next thing you know, I love it when it's like, next thing you know, having said that, these police officers come into our dressing room. Like, this is in the venue. Right. This is in the dressing room. And there was like four like SWAT police officers with a dog. And there was maybe eight of us in that room. With the label and everything. And looking back on it, I probably just sort of sat where I was because it smelt so bad in there from the shark. Yeah. That the dogs were going to smell the little, joint. But I dipped out, and there was four more cops, like, right there waiting for somebody to dip out. And they were like, when you leave it for, I'm just like, in your head, you're like, I don't want to lie to these guys, but, like, what are they doing in our dressing room? You know what I mean? Like, they weren't called to be there. This was even before the show. So they're like, sir, where do you think you're going? And I'm like, and they're like, you have anything in your bag? And I was like, yeah, I have a little weed. And so they take it, they take my passport, and they tell me that I can go across the, Reykjavik, to this courthouse the next morning. And at that time, obviously there's no Uber and stuff. So I freaking walk, right? And they charged me $500, 500 euros to get my passport back and a fine.
Jesus.
And like, I was just like, ah. So I get back, and all the guys are, busting my balls about it. And I'm just like, I can't believe this is happening. It wasn't like you can't come back in our country or anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's the worst shakedown. Like, who let these guys in here without a warrant? But that's what, that's what we love about being in other countries is, being in somebody else's culture, just sucks. Yeah. Something like that happens, but it's a good story,
Fuck, man. That is shit.
So
I would have been nail biting.
So we had a runner, right? That would, jab you to get get what you need to do. And so I was like, hey, can you run me to the post, you know, to the courthouse tomorrow morning? Yeah, no problem. I'm looking for this guy and I can't find him. I'm just like, and the hotel we're at, like, I'm like, all right, whatever. It'll be a half hour walk. So I'm walking back and like Anthony and Jim are waving because they had the runner take them to go sightsee to bust my ball. So I had to, you know, so I had to walk. And I'm just like, yeah.
Man, that's some bullshit. Oh, all right. So traveling around the world, what was some of the best food that you've tasted? I know it's a little bit off topic, and I'm sorry if I
like there was some really good like kind of concession style like alley foods that we love. Like in London, you can get like a good kebab or you know fish and sticks, or you get in Germany these chicken. Almost like a cutlet. I forget what they call it, but they have them at rest stops. And like you can get, you know, a hot dog that's served with a really good roll, but it's not on it. So you kind of dip it in the mustard, take a bite of a bread and the hot dog. So a lot of that where you're like, that seems odd. Like who puts cucumbers on sandwiches? You know, like, but who has, why do they serve baked beans in the morning, you know, proper English breakfast, you know?
Exactly.
And then you just kind of, you're like, wow, I like this, you know, like it's not what I thought I was going to be eating, you know? And yeah, for the most part, I was a good sport. I tried a lot of stuff, you know?
Right on. Was there anything you didn't like at all?
I mean, a thousand times.
Probably.
Yeah, you're like, you walk into, you know, a lot of it had to do with like the, like when we were in Estonia or, you know, Latvia, kind of the countries that broke off from Russia and they were kind of figuring it out. And we were like the guinea pigs. So it had loads of food. And nothing was like, it was like, all right, here's these eggs in this red jello looking. Oh, by the way, here's all these like, you know, anchovy sandwiches and there's a water pipe above it leaking.
Oh, you know,
and you're like, so you're like, all right, where's McDonald's? Like,
that's and fucking McDonald's horrible.
Saved us so many times because it's not, you know, it's not a quarter pounder, but obviously, but it's a Royale. So you knew what you were kind of getting with that, but you just feel like shit when you eat McDonald's for 4 or 5 nights in a row, you know?
Do you guys ever get to play in Africa at all?
No, Africa, we haven't been. No. I want to try to hit up Johannesburg and do some, a little bit of traveling.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. Do it while you can, brother. Do it while you can. That's what I was saying.
Bro. Yeah.
Do you have any events going on lately?
Yeah, April's ramping up. We got at my spot in town. We have Jeffrey Gaines tomorrow night, and but yeah, we're just trying to create a niche with it, and yeah, it's been going well. So. We're just excited to get through the spring, you know.
Are you guys looking for musicians?
Of course, always.
Any musicians watching this?
Hit me.
You can always reach out to Rivet. What is it? Rivet Canteen Event?
Visit Rivet.com.
Visit Rivet.com, okay.
Yeah, man.
Any musicians out there?
I did this little walkway. So that, a little my little drummer section. Can you see that?
Nice. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Fucking love it.
Yeah, man.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it came out good.
Where's your favorite place to chill around the house?
We've looked down and got at this great house on top of a mountain. I feel like I'm in Montana or something, but I'm 8 minutes from work. There's no neighbors. It's just all woods, you know, so I always kind of wanted that, but I didn't really at the time didn't understand the responsibility that you have living in the woods. So, the property, we finally got it to where we want. So I'll take a walk. And when the leaves fall at the bottom of our property, it kind of overlooks, this big pond and, barn, you know, so it's great. He can go there and just absolutely veg out.
Right on, man. Right on. That'll be me in May. I will be doing that every day on the farm.
That's exactly what you're gonna. Yeah, you're gonna
love every single day.
But it's no joke, man. You know, first moved in, I find two dead mice in the sink. I go, and then there's a snake skin. You know, like and we hear these birds and we think, oh, something must have happened. Oh, it's all right. That's the mom. My wife was like, no, she's fine. It's look, the mom's there. I'm like, that's not a mom. There's a hawk ripping this blue jay.
Jeez. And you know,
she goes, you get away. Like, I'm just like,
oh, man.
This hawk grabs this blue jay and just darts through the woods. It was like, all right, well, this is what, you know, one night I'm coming home and I run into this raccoon, you know, and then it looks all shady, like it's, you know, and it starts walking backwards because it sees my car. And, but yeah, it's great, man. There's deer every morning, you know, 6-7 o'clock, and they're comfortable enough up there. And it's great.
Hey, guys, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Deluxe Podcast Edition. If you like all things podcasts and different kind of unique interviews, definitely check those guys out. Another podcast to check out is the Three Beards of Wrestling. If you're into indie wrestling, pro wrestling, all kinds of wrestling talk, definitely check out the Three Beards of Wrestling podcast. That is my shameless promos for the rest of this episode, so enjoy the rest.
Nah, you need that peace and quiet in life, man.
Yeah.
Shit. So, do you have? Are you DJing anywhere these days? Anything coming up?
I do some private stuff, and I do a few spots that are local that I've been doing for a long time, and that's what I scaled back to. So it really depends on the event, or I still do some weddings and stuff, but. Yeah, I scale back a lot, but then it just makes it fun when you do. You're not doing it every night. I wanted to be home with my little man, and
you just want to enjoy life
every weekend.
You want to enjoy life. You want to enjoy life.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, man.
You know, especially you said being home with your kids and stuff. I mean, I tell people a lot, you know, you don't always have to go to work. Take that time off every once in a while. Be with your kids, watch them grow.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a nice spot where I take him to work, kind of teach him different things, see what he's into. When there's nobody in, you know, some days there will be, and, you know, he's got his own key fob, like it's he'll be turning 7 soon, so just trying to instill like the responsibility and the work ethic and stuff. So
that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Do you ever think the gang's gonna ever get back together and do something?
I think at some point we would have to, right? Like, it's just so weird that, you know, you get kicked out of a country, so they canceled the last two shows of that run. And that was the last time you should, that we were supposed to play. You know, like that, that just doesn't sit well with me. You know, like if we're going to call it, then let's, you know, put some type of conclusion to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, you know, it's, we all needed a break, you know, from each other, from just trying to live a real life, you know?
Yeah.
Even when I was home, I'm still living out of a suitcase. It's just odd. Thinking like, if I don't put my shoes in, you know, my personal belongings right here at this bunk, I'm in another city tomorrow. So like, before you go ahead and get, you know, get bent on drinking beer and hanging out, you want to make sure that it's this stuff is taken care of. Yeah, and the guys in our crew, like, they want the best for you, so they'll look out. But so you drink, and then you learn how to drink, and then make sure you can do it the next night, and then the next night. You know, you're out till 4 a.m. with some friends. You blow your horse. You blow your voice out. Is that fair to the next show? You know.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of ride that. You know, be responsible enough to say, you know what, I'm done for the night.
Yeah, it's a balance that you got to take control of.
Yeah.
Shit, man. All right. Is there any particular fan throughout your career that has ever stuck out to you?
There's been a few, and a few that I actually still keep in contact with. Yeah, DJ Cheeseball. He like named himself at, his name's Corey, but he used to come to these random shows, we all loved him. You know, and we were like, well, come out to here and stay on our bus, and then, you know, we could drop you off here. And, and he's like, all right, cool. And, you know, it wasn't hard to hang with him. You know, he's not nerding out too hard in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know? So, but yeah, there's loads of them, man. The fans have been great over the years.
That's awesome, brother. That's awesome. All right. So I know you said you have people protest. Has there been any death threats or anything to you guys ever?
I don't think so. There might have been a few when we were trying to get out of Russia that day, but for the most part, nah. There were these skinheads in Spokane, Washington one time. This was probably 1997. And there was something that happened with Jared or with Jim. You know, we just call everybody out. It's kind of like you go see a comic, like, you make fun of them. It's part of the whole show. These guys weren't feeling it, and they just kept going in at them. And the rest of the crowd's cracking up, right? So at the end of the show, they were like trying to be, you know, meeting us out at the bus, like, yeah, we're going to do this. So we come out of the bus, and Jim has this little pocket knife that Jared must have given him. And, he's like, I'll use it if I have to. And so Jared comes out and is like, I mean, what are you going to do? Open their mail? Like, the knife is so small. And then, the skinhead started laughing about that. And then we ended up drinking with them, and it was fine, you know. So
that's fucking.
Yeah.
Shit, man. Shit. I think, all right. So, the lap dance song.
Mm-hmm.
What was that made on? How was that created? How was that created?
It was made on an old Casio. Yeah, I think. Like where it's the simplest thing that you could. I don't even think you could have bought that at the time at like a Kmart or something.
Really.
But yeah. And then like some of the other stuff was you know, obviously added, but yeah, the main part of that song is that I don't think of Fisher Price, but yeah, I think it was a Casio. It's so simple, and it was real. You know, you just everybody loved that song, and we never played it live. There was no energy in it.
Were there any other songs you played throughout the years that used maybe instruments similar to it?
Maybe not as simple as that, but there's ones where, you know, you're making your own, like Pretty When I'm Drunk is all vocal stuff with the beatbox and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we just didn't want to look back and say, okay, you know, that's a Triton sound from, because that's what everybody had at the time. We didn't kind of let the influences of what we were listening to affect the way that we wrote and recorded the album. Right. We kind of wanted, you know, it doesn't all sound like Timberland in 19, you know, so I mean, the writing process is fun. It is.
Yeah. If you don't mind me asking, you can say pass. How did your parents feel about the music you wrote or music you were involved in or wrote?
My old man kind of knew I was messing around with, you know, it was still a hobby working with these guys. Mm-hmm. We would go and practice. And at the time I was still in college. So he just asked, you know, if you're going to go, I was like, hey, we have a chance to go on tour. But at the time I was paying my own college anyway. But I did say, hey, I'm going to go and do this, but I'll make sure that I finish school. And I did. Neither one of them, I don't think my dad ever opened one of the albums, but he's also, you know, military background. And, you know, he broke my NWA tape about four times growing up. But he respected my decision and what we made out of it. He knew how much you have to work at it. But as far as the music itself, my mom was into it. She liked telling her friends and having random people. She send me something, a random person, I'd have to sign something, you know. It's just like, okay, like, sure.
Have your parents ever been to a show?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my mom probably came to 6-8 of them. My old man came to a few. Yeah. It's playing this. I would try to have them come to, like, my mom lived in Atlanta, so outside of Atlanta, so that was easier. Like a Philly show is just, everybody wants to get in. No one wants to pay. You only have this many tickets. Like, you don't want them in your dressing room too long, like, because you don't want to make it a distraction with everybody else doing what they normally do. And just because you're in your hometown. So we kind of limit it a little bit, like, when they get there, you're like, hey, you know, we'll hang out after. And then once the show's over, everything opens up, and then you catch it up, and just so the process of us, you know, by the time we get there and load in and all that stuff, none of that's affected.
Yeah.
It always is anyway. So,
All right. So, I'm from outside the Philly area. I first heard you kind of underground through the Philly scene. What was it like? I mean, was that kind of your start going through there?
It was
with the gang.
The way that we got, that we grew was kind of the opposite of the way a normal band, where, you know, the ripple effect, you throw a rock in and it was the other way. We didn't really have a lot of support in the city, in Philly, in the beginning, but that was before WDRE, at the time. So like K-Rock in Phoenix started playing us, this evening DJ, and we became really good friends with the guy. He was doing it for a long time. He kind of had the leeway on breaking new stuff. And so Firewater Burn came out there, and then K-Rock in California, kind of in Los Angeles, saw what the reaction we were getting from it. And then it kind of, once K-Rock gets it, there's so many other stations that kind of, allow, it kind of watch what their trends and stuff are. So,
yeah.
And then it worked its way back to Philly.
Really? Shit, man. Almost like the Hendrix effect.
Yeah, a little bit.
Word. Shit. Well, brother, we're getting close to the hour mark here. I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
No, man. Anytime. Good talking to you.
If you ever want to do this again, I'd appreciate it, man.
Yeah, maybe next time I'll wear pants.
Oh, that's all right, man. I'm pantsless as well, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, man.
Bros.
Yeah.
All right, brother. All right, have a good night, man.
Okay.
Like always, the Bartender's Jukebox Podcast on with DJ Q-Ball.
Always remember, friends, there's always help out there, no matter what kind of depression you're going through or no matter what life's throwing at you. Always remember there is help. If you feel like you're in need, text 988. That is the suicide hotline or a text number, and you can get in contact with somebody right away. Hopefully this helps you if you're struggling, and if you're not, make sure to pass the word to help others out. Thank you very much, and cheers. We are sinners.